when you're having in a trauma reaction to something, literally your left front cortex is getting less active, dramatically less active. That's where your reasoning is supposed to take place. Over here in the right front cortex, your emotions are getting more active. So very emotional, less reasoning. And I'd say that's what it feels like to be dysregulated.
Welcome to The Lavenderit Lifestyle, the podcast on personal growth and lifestyle design. My name's Eileen, and I'm here to guide you to shine as your brightest self and create your dream life. We all have a light within and the power to create a life we love. Every Sunday, we'll share thoughtful conversations exploring how we can build a better future for ourselves and our world. Life is an art. Make it your masterpiece. Hello, my loves. Welcome back to the Lavenderit Lifestyle Podcast. It's Eileen. Today we have a beautiful episode for you on healing from our traumas, becoming aware of our dysregulation and connection wounds, and what we can do to heal them. We talk about how to re-regulate and why it's the most important thing you can learn to do for yourself as it affects your health, relationships, and your entire life as a whole. Our special guest today is Anna Runkel. Anna Runkel is the creator of the Crappy Childhood Fairy Healing Method, a breakthrough approach to help people heal trauma symptoms and change their lives, whether or not they have access to professional help. Her approach includes simple, self-directed exercises to calm emotional triggers and neurological dysregulation, and to begin changing the self-defeating behaviors that are common for people who have lived much of their lives dysregulated. Before we dive in, I just want to say, if you've been meaning to reflect, reset, and realign before the new year, now is the time. Our 2026 Artist of Life Workbook is a powerful guided journal to help you reflect on the past year, set intentional goals, and plan your most aligned and amazing year yet. It's not just a planner, it's a full life design system. You can get yours at shop.lavenderit.com. All right, on to the episode. Hello, Anna. Welcome to the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's so nice to meet you in person.
It's great to meet you too. First, start with your story. So why don't you tell our listeners how you became known as the Crappy Childhood Fairy?
I was showing people these techniques that I figured out 30 years ago that had really helped me. And I'm sure we'll talk about what was happening back then, why I was so desperate for a solution to feel better. But I stumbled on some techniques, and as soon as I started getting better so quickly from my PTSD symptoms that everybody noticed that I had changed. And they were asking me, what did you just do? What just happened? And a whole bunch of people were asking me, I mean, really within like a month, what are you doing? It's changed you so much. And I kept going with these techniques. I used them twice a day to this day. The first 25 years afterwards, I must have showed 300 people how to do it, I'd say. But it was keeping me very busy. People were always asking me, and I would stay with them, and I'd take phone calls, and I'd help them with these techniques, and I was helping all these people. And it was getting to be like 20 hours a week. And I was a single mom at the time. So I made a blog called Crappy Childhood Fairy. And I showed the techniques that I do on there. And I really just wanted a way, if people were going to ask me, I'd say, go look at this article, see if this is what you want. And if it is, I'll take calls from you. But I didn't want to like go through an hour explaining it. I didn't have time anymore. And then I made a video about how to do the writing technique that I do. And I put it on YouTube. And I was very slowly getting this blog subscribership. But one day I went to go put another video on YouTube and it had blown up. Well, by my standards then, it was like 2,000 people. That was so much.
Yeah.
And I didn't know. And I realized that YouTube and video were the perfect medium for me to teach, like, here's how to do these techniques, and to teach it in the context of the story. Like, just teaching somebody here's a technique to do. It's more like when you hear my story. Well, this is what happened in YouTube is people heard, I would describe, this is what happened to me and this is how I felt and this is what changed. And for the first time in my life, people were saying, I know exactly what you're talking about. And all these people were coming to the channel going, I have that too. No, I feel so seen. And that's the best thing about it. I would always have thought that I had a unique problem if I hadn't have put it out there online and had thousands of comments come back and people teach me what it's like to have these trauma symptoms. I learned so much just from comments, letters, emails. I get thousands of them.
So, when you worked on these techniques initially, did you think of them, or like, tell me where they came from? What were your inspirations, or where did you learn them from?
This unusual friend showed them to me. So I was in a really bad place. I grew up with like a hippie mom, and my parents got divorced when I was 7, and she turned our house into a commune, and all these people came in, and some of them were sort of cool, but there was a lot of like drugs and alcohol. People were getting violent. Nobody was feeding the kids. There were some other kids there. It was the late 60s and early 70s, and it was very crazy. And Berkeley, California, in that era, was just crazy to begin with. And a lot of parents were sort of abandoning parenthood and marriage and thinking they had to go find themselves. So it wasn't that uncommon that a lot of us kids were sort of going feral and having to figure things out for ourselves. So I had some good coping mechanisms. I would seek help from other moms. I sought help from teachers. I was able to sort of keep things together and raise my younger sibling, you know, when nobody was paying attention to us. I brought her to school with me, you know, when she was just a toddler, which they allowed back then. And so I had these coping mechanisms, and I was like a go-getter. I would say an over-functioner to the point of carrying a lot of stress in my body. I had this very deep need, like, I have to have enough money. I've got to get enough stability. I've got to have my life together. And leaving home, I left like right after my 17th birthday. I graduated early. I was like, I'm out of there. I'm going to have it so together. And I did okay. But by the end of my 20s, I did not feel connected to people. My symptoms were getting a bit worse. I was pushing people away. I wasn't having good boyfriend relationships. I was ruining good relationships and attracting bad ones. And then this terrible thing happened one day. I got randomly attacked on the street when I was 30 years old. It was a gang thing. They did graffiti on the sidewalk afterwards. So that's how I know. But for just no reason, they didn't take money. They just beat me unconscious and broke my jaw and my teeth and separated my ear. That's and terrible. I was really hurt. But worse than that, there was something wrong with my brain afterwards. And the doctors couldn't name it. They were just like, well, you're not bleeding in the brain, so I think you're fine. And I went to the therapist. And at that time, 30 years ago, like, it was like, everybody just thought, like, what you do when you've been through something terrible is you talk about it. You talk about it a lot. You talk about it for as many years as you have to, I guess. I don't know. But it was making me worse. All that talking about trauma was actually re-triggering me and throwing me into a state of nervous system dysregulation that was becoming unbearable. And so I thought therapy is supposed to work for everybody. And it wasn't working for me. So I thought I must be broken. I thought I must be like a defective person. And I felt very hopeless. And I happened to tell this acquaintance of mine. I was giving her a ride one night from this theater group we were in. And I said, you know what? Everything in my life is falling apart. I'm about to get fired. I've pushed away all my friends. I feel like I can't stay alive anymore. I don't know why I told her that. That's a very heavy thing to tell people. And I barely knew her. But I instinctively knew I could trust her, I think. And she invited me in. She goes, let me show you what I do. I used to live on the streets and drink. She had been like a homeless teenager drinking on the streets when she was, you know, and she had gotten sober, and she had not been very happy sober at first because she didn't have a way to like push down all the anger and feelings that she had. And this woman walked into her life and showed her these techniques that I call the daily practice, and showed her how to do that in the context of AA, which I wasn't in AA. And not an alcoholic, but she showed her these techniques. And then the woman, my friend, Rachel, showed them to me. And she goes, you want to try it? It's basically you tell God all your fears and resentments. You ask him to take them. And at the time I was like, God, you're talking about God. Oh, you know, I was very put off by that. But she was like, you know, you're desperate. Why don't you give it a try, you know, or not? Yeah. So I gave it a try. And instantly, as soon as I was writing, I was starting to feel better. I just wrote, I wrote for hours. I sat in her warehouse and I was writing and writing. We were talking. We ended up laughing. She said, I got to go to bed, but go home, come back, you know, call me in the morning and you can read me what you wrote and I'll check all your work with you. And so I did that. I went home, and when I woke up for the first time in so long, I just felt good. I felt peaceful inside. You know, it was just like the biggest gift anybody had ever given me from the state of distress I was in, to give me something so simple I could do to feel peace. So I've never stopped. Well, I won't say I've never stopped doing. I stopped for 2 years, 12 years later, because I just got mad at my life. I didn't like how things were turning out. And I got my experience and I went back, and I found that these techniques They just give me a new basis. At the time, they didn't even have the word like PTSD for people like me or complex PTSD. And at the time, they really did believe that everybody needed to talk about things, which now they know better. I don't think everybody knows, but a lot of people who are dysregulated or have lived through trauma, talking about it is going to re-trigger them. Mm-hmm. And it's impossible to like process information. It's impossible to calm down. And you can't even remember what you decided in therapy. So the whole thing was just making me worse and worse. And then I found this thing that like instantly took that edge off of me. So I was doing it regularly. And soon I decided to stop therapy because the idea of like talking about what happened as a child or what happened in the assault, even it just was no longer interesting to me. Everything that I could say about it or learn about it was already like long gone. And I was able to move on to solving my contemporary problems. And I had a lot of them. I had been dysregulated all my life. So I had a lot of stuff to learn to, you know, be a good person, to have good relationships, to manage money and my work properly. I just had so much to learn. But finally, because I was re-regulated, it was possible to learn.
Yeah, it's almost like you dealt with the heaviest burden on you. And after you've lifted that,
you can't solve your problems when your brain is kind of half switched off. So nobody used to know that. Now we know.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. First of all, what an amazing person, friend, who helps you with that and her patience, everything. It's beautiful to hear.
Yeah, she's still my friend. She's lovely.
Oh my God. She deserves the world.
Yeah.
Let's pause for a moment to thank today's sponsor, Shopify. When you're building something new, whether it's a business, a brand, or a creative project, it's easy to get overwhelmed trying to do everything yourself. From managing products and inventory to handling payments and shipping, it can feel like you're juggling a dozen jobs at once. That's why I'm so grateful for Shopify. When I started the Lavender Shop, I needed a platform that could take care of the back end so I could focus on creating meaningful products and connecting with all of you. Shopify powers millions of businesses worldwide and is behind 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Creating a store that reflects your brand is simple with hundreds of beautiful templates. From there, Shopify's AI tools help with product descriptions, headlines, and photography, and all the behind-the-scenes work, inventory, international shipping, returns, is handled with world-class expertise so you can focus on what you love. Turn your big business idea into with Shopify on your side. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/TLL. Go to shopify.com/TLL. Shopify.com/TLL. So why don't you tell us about this crappy childhood fairy healing method that you help others with?
Well, my friend Rachel, like she was doing all her healing in AA because her problem was alcohol. And the mystery for me is like, I don't have that problem. I barely drink. Like what? Why am I like this? Why do I relate so much to somebody who's in active alcoholism, who feels like it's life and death? And the answer finally came to me 10 years ago. Like I was using the daily practice all those years to feel better. I thought I was just a weirdo. I thought, I don't know. I'm just a very troubled person. I can pretty much keep my life together and keep growing if I use these daily practice techniques. And it's a writing technique followed by meditation 2 times a day. And I teach it. I have a free course and it's here in my first book in great detail. And I really like my purpose in life is to give everybody like the whole thing, the real tool, so that if they feel like it might help them, they can try it. And I think about 1 million people are doing it now. It's wow. So many people have found it helpful. Not everybody does. I'll put that out there.
Yeah.
Some people, they just, I don't know. It's just not their thing. But it's a very simple thing. It costs nothing, you know, paper and pencil. Most people can manage that. And you can do it anytime when you're in distress. And so her problem was alcohol. I had to figure out what was wrong with me. And I spent many years kind of figuring out what was wrong and how to solve it by seeking mentorship and living my life and making mistakes and learning from my mistakes. I sometimes think there's really no other way. The daily practice tools allowed me to make mistakes. And no matter how embarrassed or humiliated or sad I felt about things that didn't work out, I had a tool to process those emotions at last. I think when you've had trauma, feeling like feeling those hurt feelings or, you know, the end of a relationship or feeling stupid, it can be so overwhelming because literally early trauma causes changes in your brain and nervous system. It makes it very hard to process thoughts and feelings, to change thoughts and feelings into memories rather than the kind of thing that you end up looping on when you have something traumatic has happened. You think about it way too much. It's still giving you adrenaline and cortisol and your heart's pounding. That's unprocessed trauma. It's processed when you're like, yes, I remember that happening, but your whole body isn't reacting like it's happening right now.
Yes, I see.
So being able to do that was changing me, even though I had no words for it. And things came to a head when my first marriage ended. I had two little kids. I had to figure out how to get my life together. And the first time, you know, a couple years later, I tried dating somebody and it was a disaster. The person that was very troubled, secretly had a bad drug problem, and then died. And it was such a bad choice on my part, but I honestly could not see it coming. There was something about my trauma wounds or where I was in my life or just my own, like, inability to be strong. I wanted it to work and I couldn't see it coming. When I look back, I can think of the red flags. Don't we all have those things, like those experiences?
But you're hopeful when you're in it.
Yeah, but it was a hard time. I was a single mom. I was going through this like medical crisis that was not my fault. There was like a medical accident that happened in a surgery and I ended up in and out of the hospital for 4 years. It was very rough. It cost me all my money, you know. It was a very hard time. So having a boyfriend for a minute there was very tempting, and it was easy to overlook some of the obvious red flags that were there and overlook some of the complications about the whole thing that were right there. But I just thought, no, this will work. And I'd kind of done that before in my life. And after that happened, I never wanted that to happen again. I just was like, I have kids. I can't have this kind of drama in my life of drugs or somebody dying of drugs or all this upset. It's got to be stable. It's got to be good. And I kind of made an inner decision. I'm going to not have a relationship if that's what it takes to not bring this drama into my life ever again. And that was a couple year period where I really worked on myself and I got brave. And I consulted some people who I considered very powerful mentors who previously I'd been really into. I wouldn't have asked them because I knew they would tell me I had to change. And that's so scary. You know, I think everybody fears that. Like when you kind of know that you're in trouble and you need to change, you don't want to talk to the people who are going to tell you flat out, yes, you do. And I'm going to tell you what's going wrong. Yeah. But when it got bad enough and for my kids' sake, I was just really serious and there was no way I was going back. So I consulted those people that I had always known I should ask. I said, can you help me with this? And they did. They were happy to help. And their help was very kind. And some of it was scary to follow, but all of the advice I got was good advice. And it took me about a couple years to just straighten that out. I went on a couple like casual first dates or something, just coffee, nothing big. And I just knew right away, like I suddenly, at that time I had new criteria. This is a big thing I coach women on. I had a new criteria. I don't bring trouble into my life anymore. Mm-hmm. It was, I needed to have that inner peace that my daily practice gave me. And I needed to have standards. And the standards had really been like wrung out of me over the years between how I grew up and then learning to fit myself to crappy relationships all the time. You know, like I see a lot of women still doing that. It's easy to do. It's very lonely not having anybody. And it's also very easy to believe that nobody would ever want me if I had high standards. And I believed that for a long time. So I thought, well, I have to just sort of be cool girl. And we call it in crappy childhood fairy, we call it crap fitting. When you fit yourself to crap, you fit yourself to an unacceptable person or a situation because you think you can't do better.
Yeah.
And what was so helpful to me is when I reached that point where I was like, I don't care if I never have anybody again. I mean, I cared, but I was willing to let that go. Yeah. To not have this tragedy go on in my life anymore. And after that, after I really made that decision, I only dated one person and I'm married to him and he's the guy who brought the tea to me when we were getting ready to record. Yeah. So the crappy childhood fairy method has to do with first you get re-regulated and then you solve the trauma-driven problems, the self-defeating behaviors that we all end up with if we grew up with trauma or we've been living dysregulated. It's not our fault that we got sort of left with this mess in our lives, but we're the only people who can solve it, who can go in and set things right. And it takes a lot of willingness and focus and courage, because the only thing you can fix, this is actually great news. Some people will think it's bad news, which means they're not ready to heal yet. The good news is what you're creating, the problems you create are the ones you can fix. So those are the good ones. It's like when you find something that's like, oh, I'm creating this problem. Oh, good. There's something I can do to change it.
That's a new perspective, right?
Yeah.
Like you created your problem so you can fix them.
Yeah. You can't change other people. You definitely can't change the past. And that's what I think kind of gets overrated in therapy, is that if you talk about the past and other people enough, you'll feel better. That wasn't my experience.
Right. Because you needed to change the now, the future you.
It's not that we don't need to talk about what happened. I know that that's important. Yeah. And that validation, and just to get some reflection, like, that's really bad. That was trauma. That's not supposed to happen to kids. That can be very helpful, but just not for years like I was doing. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So this is a great segue to your first book, Reregulated. So why don't you tell us about the main message and I guess takeaways that you want listeners to get from that book?
Yeah. Well, in the book, I tell the story that I just shared with you and summarized. Right. And I, as a background to say, they didn't used to know what complex PTSD was. The book, The Body Keeps the Score, came out in 2014. And when I read it, that was like this huge day in my life where I'm like, this is exactly what I have. I've always had it.
Yeah.
This is what I've been battling all by myself my whole life. Even when I was in therapy, if people don't know what it is, they're sort of psychologizing your behavior. They're thinking that you're trying to repeat mistakes of the past. Like they would say, oh, you're trying to repeat your childhood. No. When you're neglected and abused as a kid, it can, not everybody reacts the same, but in many of us, it causes a neurological injury where it's very hard to keep your nervous system regulated. And your nervous system is this extraordinary part of you that governs not just your feelings, not just your ability to have senses, to pay attention. What season is it? How cold is it? It's running your digestion. It's running your reproductive system. It's running your immune system, your hormones. And it's also allowing your brain to think, remember, and learn. And if it's dysregulated, which means it's glitching a bit, it can't do all those functions very well. So they've known since the 90s, wow, there's a high correlation between early trauma and chronic disease. Mm-hmm. But why? Now the best information we have is because it's disrupting your body's natural functions like circulation and white blood cells. And, you know, your body can't run itself properly when things are dysregulated. So there's this amazing thing that we can do to have better health and to feel better, and that is to re-regulate our nervous system. There's so much flexibility there to re-regulate. I think there are some people where it's really difficult, like let's say somebody with profound autism, they could be very dysregulated and they would have a hard time controlling that. But for most of us, we have a lot of ability to re-regulate our nervous system if we know that that's what it is and we can start to detect it. So some aspects of dysregulation you can feel. Most you can't. You can't feel, you know, your hormone releases and things like that. That's happening. And you might notice that you're sick later or something's going on, but you don't feel it when it's happening. But what you can feel is like you go numb, you feel discombobulated or clumsy, you feel spaced out, you have brain fog. I've read some experts believe that a lot of ADHD diagnoses might really be complex PTSD because the symptoms are so similar. So whatever ADHD is, which is a debatable, I guess, debated out there, I'm not an expert on that. But quite often, it could just be trauma. And I say just trauma. But the reason why trauma, I say it's like a little less, because it's easier to change trauma wounds. It's easier to re-regulate trauma wounds. And who knows? I think we're going to learn a lot more in the next 10 years about what are these neurological changes. Some people say that complex PTSD is a form of neurodiversity. I don't know. I think of it as an injury. I'm going by entirely like, what's it like for me and what do my students tell me it's like for them? And I read a lot on it, but I think there's a lot of disagreement out there. And right now, if you go to a therapist, most of them will say they know what it is and they treat it. But if you actually ask them, oh, what is it and how do you treat it? They would tell you very different things. And they would have very different depths of knowledge about it. So for anybody who's thinking about like going to a therapist for this, it's important to ask a lot of questions and to get clear, like, what do you know about this? Do you understand the connection between like dysregulation and relationships? So the symptom of dysregulation that other people notice most is emotional dysregulation, because that's where we lash out. Lashing out is one of the most hurtful things we can do. And the thing that will most quickly ruin a relationship is something that's slightly hurtful or annoying happens, and our reaction is this big.
Right. You get triggered easily.
It's true. Yeah. And I use the word trigger to mean it activates dysregulation. So when you're having a trauma reaction to something, literally your left front cortex is getting less active, dramatically less active. That's where your reasoning is supposed to take place. Over here in the right front cortex, your emotions are getting more active. So very emotional, less reasoning.
I see.
And I'd say that's what it feels like to be dysregulated. Something upsets you and you just go from 0 to 60 very fast, and it feels a little out of control.
Yeah.
Sometimes feels like something is running down your arms. And I've heard, you know, some of the experts have said, well, yes, actually you're secreting hormones, you know, reactive hormones.
It's your nervous system responding because it thinks it's in like danger, right? Is that what it is?
Yeah, it's responding as if it's in danger. But the, you know, I think fight or flight reaction initially is a regulated response. It's a rational, good animal thing, you know,
yeah,
to be like, there's danger. I'm going to get into a mode where I can run really fast. But when it's just happening randomly and you can't get out of it, that's dysregulation.
Yeah.
So there's not like a perfect device that tells you this is dysregulation, this is something else. You have to kind of go by the feel of it. But once you know what dysregulation is, it's sort of like when you buy a car, you know, and you're like, suddenly you realize lots of cars just like yours are out there and you didn't notice it before. You start seeing dysregulation anywhere, everywhere. So when somebody's like snapping at a cashier, you're like, ah, they're dysregulated. I see it. They got offended about something and they're, woo, they just like went off the scale.
The levels are different.
Yeah, the level is wrong. And so a lot of like advice that people, therapists or Instagram or whatever, people, there's like these truisms that people say, like, always trust your gut. That wasn't good advice for me when I was emotionally dysregulated. My gut did not have my gut was not detectable. I was feeling a lot of feelings, but I was reacting to things that may not have been totally accurately read.
Yes.
And other things like, you need to sit with your feelings. So that's really bad advice for somebody who's like going down, you know, and very dysregulated in a negative emotion direction. Sometimes you just need to, regulate your emotions.
Yeah.
And just get a little balance there. You know, feeling them is not the goal. You feel them. You feel them too much sometimes.
Right. Because your feelings are so loud in that.
They're so loud and they're messy. But what's interesting is sometimes some people don't go in the loud direction. They just go in the freeze direction and they feel nothing. Some people, I would say this is true of me. If I get emotionally dysregulated in a loud way, we're calling it loud, but I mean emotionally intense.
Yeah.
It'll sometimes be followed by a flatness. And even my face will have like no expression. And this is when I've hurt people the most. There's an argument. We're sincerely arguing about something, but I kind of get dysregulated about it. I say something too harsh. I shut down. And I go flat. And then I just say things that are uncaring and like, I don't need you. I don't need anybody. Yeah. This is nothing to me. I say things like that. And I remember people doing that to me before and being just so stricken, like, how could you say that?
Right.
You know, that's not true. And that's what it feels like to be dealing with someone who's emotionally dysregulated. So it's really important to know how to re-regulate.
Time for another short break. The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Traditions aren't just inherited, they're chosen. You get to choose which ones to keep, which ones to release, which ones to create from nothing. Maybe you hold on to your family's holiday recipes, but let go of the pressure to make everything perfect. Maybe you start something entirely new this year, and maybe you add therapy to the list. Not because something is wrong, but because the holidays can hold so much joy and grief. Connection and loneliness, magic and overwhelm, sometimes all at once. Therapy gives you a space to hold all of it without judgment, without pretending everything is fine. And BetterHelp makes finding that support a little easier. With over 30,000 licensed therapists, BetterHelp is one of the largest online therapy platforms in the world. They've helped over 5 million people find support with over 12 years of experience matching you to the right fit. And if your match doesn't feel right, you can switch to a different therapist at any time. This December, start a new tradition by taking care of you. Our listeners get 10% off at betterhelp.com/TLL. That's betterhelp.com/TLL. Even you saying that, I think for listeners, it's really important to even just be aware when someone is emotionally dysregulated. So you understand, oh, they're not speaking from like a logical place. They're just, it's a reaction.
Yeah. And there are very graceful things you can do, whether you're the person who is dysregulated or the person who's on the receiving end, who's probably going to get dysregulated, because that's what happens when somebody's screaming at you.
I think everyone has some level of this, though.
Yeah, so we've probably all been on both ends of it, at least a little, maybe a lot. But there's little things you can do. It's like, first of all, just acknowledge that you're dysregulated and tell the other person, I'm dysregulated right now. And if you're not doing it, make it safe for the other person to say, it seems like you're getting kind of dysregulated. Can we take a break?
Yeah.
Most people who are dysregulated, there's an abandonment wound in there somewhere. And so that's why taking a break will feel like death. Like, no, we can't take a break. We have to keep fighting until magically I feel better. You could stay up all night. Many of us have, you know, trying to process things. And, you know, you're hurting me, you and your things you've said, like, I'm so hurt and I won't feel better till you say whatever it is I magically think you're going to say. The big lesson I had to learn is the reason I'm feeling distress, it might initially have been something they said or did, but it's coming from in here. It's some sort of like well of memories with no memories that are from so far back and my nervous system is going off and I need to go take time to just re-regulate. And sometimes I can do it in 15 minutes. Sometimes I need longer. But if I can say, listen, can I step away for a minute? I want to calm down. Then you reassure the other person. I want to have this conversation. I'm not leaving you. I just know that if I speak right now, I'm going to say things I don't mean and I don't want to hurt you. Could I have 30 minutes to go use my tools and then we come back and we meet here and talk about it again? And most people will say yes. If they've been through this with you before, they'll be quite grateful that you're being like sensible about it. And then you go use your tools. And the tools that I have, the daily practice, as well as some emergency measures to get re-regulated, can make a huge difference. And they can take this huge, like, icky pile of problems that you feel like you need to dump at this person's feet. It just like makes a lot of it just sort of like, it's not that, it's not that, it's not that. And you might have this much. I do need to talk to you about this, this thing that happened, this thing you said, the way that you didn't, you know, you didn't invite me to this thing and I was hurt. It comes down to a size that you can communicate and that they may be able to hear.
I see. Yeah, like removing all the noise, distilling it into the main point that you were trying to get across.
Yeah, you don't have to like punish them, yell at them, break up with them. You can talk it through. And not every couple has what it takes to have that conversation. But if you're going to have a good relationship, you're going to need to learn this, to, you know, take your dysregulated emotions over here, learn to just process them and then come back with the thing you need to talk about. And amazing things can happen when you're coming from that place.
And is your favorite method to process that writing and meditating? Or is there anything else that you'd like to share that's really helpful for people?
There's several different ways you can support your nervous system to get more regulated. And some of them are sort of slow and long-term, like the way you eat and getting your sleep. They're all very important. But in the moment, that may not be, you know, how you slept last night or for the past year is not changeable for you right now. And so there's emergency measures. And those are things like just you give yourself a physical sensation, like you sit hard in a chair and you're like, that's my weight in the chair. Or you stomp your feet alternately, left, right, left, right. You're basically calling your awareness back into your physical body to feel yourself, which is your nervous system is in your body. And when you're disconnected and dysregulated, this is where we get the sort of metaphor, I'm out of my body. We're never out of our body unless we're dead, but.
Right. But you're not feeling, you're not aware, you're not mindful.
You're not aware. You literally can't really feel yourself. Yep. And when you can't feel yourself, you don't have attunement to your environment. You can't tell that your friend sitting with you is very sad right now or scared of how loud you're, you know, how intense you're being. You can't feel it. And so you end up sort of like bulldozing over things or walking into bad situations that aren't safe. Mm-hmm. I think a classic situation, a woman is asked out like at the bar, like, do you want to come home? If you're dysregulated, you're not going to see the red flags on this. And you're not going to even feel your own sense of like, that doesn't seem like a good idea right now. So you're cut off from yourself and you're cut off from your environment and you're running on emotion. And because that's the one thing that's operating strong in it. And it can lead you to these terrible mistakes. And so that thing where they say that traumatized people are trying to repeat their childhood, I don't think that's what it is. I think it's that when we chose a mate, somebody to get to hook up with even, our brain wasn't working properly. But because of attachment wounds, just even having sex with somebody would produce an attachment so strong that it feels impossible to leave. Attachment wounds often have that abandonment side of them. So that technique I talked about where you don't say, I'm not leaving you, I want to come back. You're avoiding triggering abandonment in another person. When you're walking into a bad situation and you've just accidentally attached your whole like attachment system, which is this also this beautiful part of our humanity that we attach to other people, you know, to a loved one, a partner, a child, close friends, we attach. But that intense attachment is not appropriate for somebody you just met. It's not appropriate. You don't know them yet. And so if that attachment happens very quickly and you have an abandonment wound, you can't leave, you could spend years of your life with somebody you never really chose. It's like just your shut down nervous system chose it in a panicked moment. And here you are, you know. And so that's one of the tragedies. And I think, you know, when you have kids in a trauma driven relationship, then that's how you pass it to the next generation. Mm-hmm. So when people talk about breaking the cycle, one of the best things you can do is learn to re-regulate and then really slow down the process of courtship so that you have the extra time that you need as a person with trauma to take information in, to see what are we dealing with here? Is this a good fit for me? And then to have had time to even know what's a good fit for me.
Right. Like you said, you have your criteria versus just, you know, attaching right away.
You're not just in survival, you know, like anybody, please.
Yeah, exactly.
Help me. I'm alone. Yeah. And a lot of life is like that sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I do want to mention your new book, Connectability. I feel like this is, we're already talking about it, but tell us about why you wrote this book and what inspired you to focus on connection and belonging.
Well, in my view, this is my personal experience of what it's like to have trauma wounds from childhood, is there's three areas of life that it affects. And those three areas all need healing. And the first one is dysregulation. Got to learn to re-regulate. The second one is disconnection. You got to learn to connect again. Yeah. And the third one is self-defeating behaviors. And the three of them, they just like weave into each other. And, you know, if you're dysregulated, it's really hard to connect. If you're dysregulated and disconnected, you could easily slip into rage attacks, addictions, black and white thinking. You know, something I find really interesting about traumatized people is we're very vulnerable to cults.
Because they want us that sense of belonging.
Yeah. And a very strong, like, this is what you do. This is what you don't do. And if you do what I say, you're in. And if you don't do what I say, you're shunned, you know, that kind of thing. Like people who didn't have trauma are a little more just like, I'm not doing your thing. Yeah. You know, I get to decide. And trauma can sort of like shut down that capacity. And so in a weird way, some relationships are a cult of two. Some friend groups are a cult of six or whatever. Right. I've been talking a lot on my YouTube channel about female bullying. I feel like, wow, I had no idea it wasn't just me who had experienced that. Mm. There's like this mean girl thing that people do. And it is cult-like behavior. It's like you follow the group or you, if you don't, you know, you're shunned or there's this huge pressure to conform. And so for traumatized people, this can be terrifying because you don't have very good connections. And so an abusive relationship, a pack of mean friends, you know, a terrible job where you're mistreated, it'll feel like you have to stay. It's the best you'll ever do. You'll never get anything else. And the solution is you need to become connectable. When you have strong connections, then you have choices about what you do in your life. And so I had to write this book because I was like 18 years into my healing. This is the book. So proud of it.
Yeah.
The subtitle is Heal the Hidden Ways You Isolate, Find Your People, and Feel at Last Like You Belong. Not belonging. I have discovered everybody in my audience has that. I thought I was like this weirdo who I would just join things and it was like, I don't know why. I just don't fit in. And in some ways I don't fit in some groups, but in some ways I think it's a part of my neurological injury that I can't feel my connection to people.
Yeah.
And so when I learned about dysregulation, I said, I'm going to see if I can heal that. I'm going to see if I can simultaneously help my brain and nervous system to feel connection and also understand that sometimes I don't feel it, but it's there. And you know who taught me this? People on the autism spectrum, because they feel disconnected a lot. They often feel just like I do, like, hey, I didn't get the memo, this nonverbal communication thing. I don't understand what's going on with this group, or why is nobody laughing at my joke? Mm. Or why did they raise their eyebrows at the potluck thing I brought? You know, what am I doing wrong here? I just didn't know. And so people on the autism spectrum, they come up with just like social skills. This is what you do. You know, you're supposed to laugh at jokes. You're supposed to, you're supposed to bring a gift. And so I thought, well, if they can do that, I can do that. And so I set about to teach myself, what is it that's connectable? That was my word. I've used that word for a long time. It's like people have this magic quality of like, it's just easy for them to be around people. They know what to say. They know the right thing to say. They sort of slide into a group and everybody feels glad they're there. They're easy to be friends with. And I wanted to be like that. You know, there's always role models around us of people who just do that so beautifully. And I wanted to be better at that because even though I was healing, there was a time in my life where I just realized all my friendships were shallow. When I was in the hospital for a long time, I had almost no visitors. I had a few. I don't want to discount that, but it was nowhere near what I needed as a single mom in the way of help. And not having help meant that I didn't heal properly, and I ended up having 14 major surgeries. And I finally healed when the doctor said, look, we can't really do anything more for you. This hasn't worked out. And I had to have like medical appliances. I was pretty messed up, but I wasn't going to die of it. And I just sort of accepted the situation and I moved on. But I went back to my daily practice. And I then learned this practice sets up my body to heal. And I remembered when I first started using it, I overcame asthma and migraines and back pain, all the sort of classic stress-related things. Mm-hmm. But then when I was having all these major surgeries and they would like fix my body and stitch things together, muscles and skin and stuff. And it would just kept falling apart. And they kept saying, we don't know why you're not getting enough blood flow to the tissue. And we don't know why this doesn't make sense. But now we know that if you are carrying a lot of unprocessed trauma, you're still in fight or flight all the time, which it was hard not to be, you know, with all that surgery. But I had just been divorced. I was scared about money. I was scared about everything. And I was lonely. Your body can't do its job exactly right. So I kept having this intuitive sense, which was right. I think if I were just a little stronger, I could sort of get over this. I could heal. And I kept feeling that. So I had written off the possibility. And I was doing that the couple of years where I was just getting mentorship and focusing and very like quieting my life, organizing my life, living a well-ordered life, caring for my kids, caring for myself, very quiet, no guys. And that was when my body healed. That was when my body healed and it just healed by itself. And it wasn't expected to do that.
This is so fascinating to me. Also, just knowing if you have trauma, your body is in fight or flight. When our body is in that fear state, it's like fear constricts. Right? It like blood is not flowing.
Exactly.
It's not circulating the way it should. And they say that when you feel safe, like the rest and digest mode is when you feel safe. And that's when your body turns on the healing mode.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting, the concept that if you are traumatized and always in that fight or flight state, your immune system, like it's not working the way that it should.
It can't do its job properly. Yeah.
Right. That's super interesting to me.
And it's not woo-woo. There were, you know, I used to question like, really? I was like, really? But here's an example. A girl who has been sexually abused will go into puberty an average of 2 years earlier than her peers who were not sexually abused. So, you know, this is no joke. Trauma changes how your body runs itself.
Yeah. Wow.
And this explains so much about why there's a higher rate of cancer and a higher rate of heart disease and also dementia. This is something like at my age, I'm starting to think, gosh, I know I've been through a lot of stress. My body's been through a lot and I'm trying to give it as much peace as I can so that I can sort of bounce back. Like I used to smoke cigarettes, 2 packs a day. I quit 28 years ago. I've read that I kind of canceled out the risk that caused me, even though I smoked heavily for 16 years. I don't think it's exactly zero, but it's amazingly better. I'm like, well, if that's true of cigarettes, then I'm going to treat it as true for the incredible stress I went through, the lack of sleep. I mean, there were so many years I didn't get more than 4 hours.
Yeah, I believe you can heal and you can cancel out what you did to your body before.
Yeah, they call it somaticizing when your body takes it hard. You know, the stress comes out in physical problems.
Yeah.
and you can unsomaticize. By learning to re-regulate, you can unsomaticize. So every single person has so much to gain by calming their, learning to, you know, master re-regulation and to notice when it's happening. And it's not just trauma that causes it. It's anxiety. It's real scary things. You know, we had a little earthquake here in Oakland last week. It wasn't that big, but boy, my nervous system was just like, I know what this is. You have them where you live too, you know.
Yeah.
Your nervous system is like, it's got a mind of its own. It's like, I don't know what you're doing with your conscious mind, but I'm getting us in the door jam right now. And you like wake up in the door jam.
What I'm getting from this conversation is this is probably the most important thing you can do for yourself. Not just for your mental, emotional health, but literally physical health and longevity.
And right? Your cognitive health.
Everything stems from this. And people think it's just, oh, it's just emotions and blah, blah, blah. But no.
It's all psychological. And it's part psychological, but there's so much more.
Yeah.
And here's a beautiful thing. This is something. And, you know, I didn't even put this in the book. I finished the book almost a year ago.
Yeah.
And then I've been talking to a lot of people about it. And I continue to learn and read. And I'm like, you know, I'll give you the bonus chapter.
Yeah.
I saw this visualization of what your nervous system looks like, but it's an animation. You can't really see it, but it's like lit up. It's all the like nerves and lines and little nodes. And I looked at it and I thought, that looks like an angel to me. Oh, that's a thought that I have an angel inside me that like governs my body and my perception. And it needs some love, you know, needs some good care. I had read this kind of far out theory, except I think it's true that, you know, we have collective consciousness. If our nervous system is working well, we can do this thing we call reading the room. You walk in and you're like, what's going on in here? There's something heavy in here, or I don't trust this person, or wow, I feel so safe with these people. Like your nervous system is communicating with other people's nervous system all the time. It's not always like reaching your conscious mind, but through my daily practice, which is writing and releasing fearful and resentful thoughts again and again, twice a day, and then meditating to let your mind recover and kind of put itself back to a good state again. I've done that now for 30 years. I've taught a million people. I know hundreds of people who have been doing it long term, and many of them, some people just, they're like, I don't like it. I'll just acknowledge that. Some people, they're like, I don't know. I don't really want to do it. Fine. Yeah. My kids do it. My ex-husband does it. My ex-husband's wife does it. Like it's, I just know a lot of people who do it, and then all of my students do it. But it's a way you can kind of refresh. It's like taking a shower after a long flight. You know, you're just like, blah, blah, blah. I just need all this fearful, resentful stuff to be washed off. And it's not like you're not going to get grubby again the next day, but you won't have this all over you. And you're going to have a period of, you know, it feels like being clean, like getting into your jammies and being clean, you know, that good feeling and clean sheets.
I love that. Yeah. You need it's a daily energetic emotional shower.
It's an energetic shower and you get these thoughts out. And literally for traumatized people, they do get very clustered up in there because you can't process them. So it just assists. I think what it's doing, you know, if I had to guess, I'd just say, I think it's assisting with processing, letting them go. Some people do this with exercise, by the way. Exercise is always a good thing to do. Moving your body in any way, whether it's sweeping or going to the gym, it doesn't have to be this big major thing. But that's a really good thing. You can come at your nervous system through the body, but you can also come at it through your thinking. And for me, I mean, I'm a writer, I'm a YouTuber, I'm a talking person. And so my stress comes out that way too. It'll be like overthinking and ruminating about things I'm angry about or something. It's not always like in my body. Or not. That's not the first thing I notice about it. So we come at it every day with like, this is what I've got. And there's a lot of like, resentment can be at yourself. That's what shame and guilt are. And I think shame and guilt are actually helpful emotions. They're sort of there to guide us like, there's something you need to correct here. Now, when you've been dysregulated and you've had a rough life, it also is all this other stuff that's not even real. But that's not all of it. We have to remember there is an authentic and useful kind of shame and guilt. That's your conscience going, oh, hey, Anna, you were just rude to somebody. Go back and say sorry. It's a helpful thing. So my daily practice just kind of whittles things down, you know. I'm refreshed. I know what it is I need to respond to, problems that need my attention. I also know what it is that I can just relax and be grateful. And I know people who are like, you should do a gratitude list. I think gratitude lists are good and fine. But if you're doing this, if you're freeing yourself of the fearful and resentful thoughts and feelings a couple times a day, the natural result is to feel more acceptance, more gratitude, more peace, and also more inspiration. That's my favorite thing. Like yeah. my juice is like, I love getting new ideas. I'm like, oh, I'm going to make a video about this.
Yeah.
And then I want to run off and do it. I love that feeling.
Yeah.
And if I'm down and dysregulated, I never get those ideas. And when I'm re-regulated and I'm fresh from meditation, sometimes I can't even like stop. I have to keep extra paper by me while I'm meditating because I'll be like, oh, and also this, oh, and this too.
Well, it makes so much sense. It also, because I'm spiritual, in the spiritual sense, when you're the first step of writing is you're letting go of the negative thoughts and fears in your head. And then when you sit to meditate, you're already clean. And then what you're opening yourself to fresh ideas, new energy, and it's natural you're going to get inspiration.
It's natural that you are. Now, the technique is very specific because if you're already feeling pretty bad and you're ruminating and stuff, I use very specific language as I was taught. Very specific, because if you just like list a bunch of things that make you mad, you'll probably get madder. So it's a very specific thing that's a little more like a prayer, like this is what, you know, almost like a confession. This is all the junk in my mind and please remove them.
Yeah.
And if people are not inclined toward a higher power concept, they can release it themselves. I personally, like, I'm just so glad, like my friend suggested, I put God at the top of the page and I did it. And I was like, I mean, it was undeniable. Like a whole burden was lifted. So I'm like, whoever did that, thank you. Let's call it God. And so then I became a very, a God person. And, but you don't have to be to do this.
Yeah. I love it so much. So I do want to ask one more question about connectability. So what have you learned works to heal that connection wound?
My signature thing is always very practical. Like it's all very good to talk in ideas about stuff, but what do you do? And so in connectability, I give the background about dysregulation and trauma and other reasons why we just walk around feeling disconnected for no reason. Thanks to the pandemic, a lot of more people can relate to this feeling. And I don't mean thanks, but in a weird way for me, at least I relate to more people. There are more people I can relate to now. It's like, yeah, I know. Yeah. It feels like you don't belong anywhere. A lot of people got rusty or they got so disconnected during that time, they couldn't really come back fully. Yeah. This is a very good path for that too. Or some people are introverted or they're socially awkward. So this is a good way to come at those things. Then I get into 9 obstacles. There are probably 1,000 obstacles. Everybody's unique, but 9 common ones are we have avoidant tendencies. We're managing our stress and dysregulation by pulling away, you know, saying no to invitations, keeping people at arm's length, showing up for dinner with a group of people, but then looking at our phones the whole time. Like somehow we can't quite deal with the stress and intensity of interacting with a bunch of people. And it is like a muscle. So if you've been isolating a lot, people will feel overwhelming. You got to have to come out of that. You also need boundaries. And a lot of us didn't learn that at home. And so instead of boundaries, we use anger or leaving relationships. We just cut people off when something really needs to be discussed. Maybe we don't have to throw out the whole relationship. And if you have a boundary, it's safe to enter a situation, a social situation, a party, let's say. You know, I don't know. I don't know if I'm going to like this party. I don't really know anybody. I feel fat today. You know, whatever the reasons are to isolate, your daily practice can get you over yourself a little bit with that. And then having boundaries starts like, well, if it gets weird, if you truly have no one to talk to, you can leave. I was at a party like that with my husband. He knew everybody. I knew nobody. He's a musician. They were all playing. I had nobody to talk to. I tried to talk to like 30 people and it just went nowhere. And I was just like, I don't know what's wrong here. This doesn't usually happen. And I wanted to go, but we had driven a long way and I just stuck it out. But it just was such a drag. And I made such a mental note, like I need a boundary. I need a way to get out of stuff like this. I don't even want to spend, it was 5 hours of my life being I had this idea. Well, I could have taken the car and said, how long do you want to be here? All right, I'm going to go do something else and I'll come back and get you. That would have been a great solution. But instead I was miserable. I was mad. So that's boundaries. And then there's this other problem. We tend to collect, especially traumatized people, or if we're disconnected, we end up with these people who are really not great. They are mean people or they're troubled. We have bosses like that. We have partners like that, friends, relatives. And something about us, instead of standing up for ourselves or moving on, we just shut ourselves down to make it work. And again, because we're carrying that idea, I better put up with it because after all, I'll be all alone if I don't have this person. And this is the leap of faith that we have to take is to just, you don't have to like make a big dramatic scene of ending it. You can, sometimes you have to, but mostly if you just stop, if you just let go, the whole thing fades and the space opens up in your life. And yes, at first it feels very lonely. And then it starts to fill up with people who fit who you are now. And that is when things start getting really fun. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I never think the lonely spells are fun when I'm going through them, but I look back and they were often like really colorful and deep. And, you know, I can remember things from the 2 years when I was alone with my kids and we were really poor. I would take them, the older one had a bike and the little one had a little baby seat on my bike. And I'd drive them up to wine country and we'd ride our bikes around and then we'd go get a Subway sandwich. That was our day out. And I look back and I'm like, oh, those were the days. Yeah. Those sandwiches tasted so good after a bike ride and the kids were so happy to have them. It was a great memory. Yeah. And then we'd go home in wine country. Everybody takes, you know, a spa, hot tub, mud baths. So we couldn't afford stuff like that. We'd go home and we'd have a bath and they'd get in the bathtub and I'd make them bacon and we'd pretend it was a fancy hotel and they would go, oh, this is the nicest fancy hotel we've ever been in.
That is so cute.
Yeah. And I think back and I'm like, I think that was more fun than any fancy hotels that I get to stay in now that things are better.
Yeah. That's so sweet.
Life opens up.
There are gems in every phase of life and you might not notice it when you're in it, but in hindsight, then you'll see it.
Yeah. I work a lot. I have a lovely family, a husband. My kids are young adults now. I have friends and I have the Crappy Childhood Fairy community and it's very much a community. We have like a membership and I feel so loved. I would have been happy if I just had a couple people to love and love me back. But it's like when your life can finally sort of move into the phase where you're bringing your gifts into the world to share with others, then it just fills up. It's just like, it fills up with so much meaning and love. And so even when it's a bad day and something hard happens, you're never alone. You never have to deal with anything by yourself anymore. And you know what to do. If things get hard, if a difficult situation arises, you know what to do. And that is safety.
I'm getting a little teary. I don't know. I think I relate to you and I also am so happy for you. Just hearing the way you speak and where you are in your life right now, I can tell you've made it to a beautiful place.
Yeah. Yeah. And who even knows where it's going? Good, I hope. Good, I trust. Yeah.
I think you're such a gem. This is amazing.
Thank you.
I wish we had more time, but Anna, I think I'll wrap it up here. If you could leave the listeners with a final message, a piece of advice, what would that be?
Well, I hear from people who have been very isolated for a long time and have struggled with other people. They put on the YouTube channel sometimes in the comments. This always, I just really take notice of this. They say, I give up. People are awful. I'm just not going to try anymore. And I just want to tell everybody, I know that feeling. And I know like it feels like that's the only option, but there's another option. And that is where you start to learn to re-regulate your nervous system and practice connectability and start to have just tiny little experiences one at a time, very slowly, to start to open up again to that connection. I don't think it's possible. It's not really possible to grow up all the way into all that you're meant to be without other people. And I don't think it's possible to be happy until you're using those gifts that you're endowed with. And gifts are always meant for the benefit of other people. And so it's a very sad thing when people give up. And I understand how it feels necessary for a period of time, but it doesn't have to be forever. Don't give up. This has simple techniques you can start using wherever your starting place is, where you're just, whether you're a covert avoider who's looking like you're together with it, you know, doing people successfully, but you're not really connecting. Or if you are at a point where you can't deal with people right now, maybe a dog is your best friend right now. That's okay. Those are all places you can start from.
Thank you so much. And then finally, where can we find you online?
Well, my YouTube channel is called Crappy Childhood Fairy. And my website's also called that. You can find my coaching program, my webinars, my courses, my membership program. So we have a whole bunch of cool stuff going on the website. And the books are available at booksellers, online booksellers everywhere, many bookstores too. Nowadays, there are fewer bookstores. So for a sure thing, you can go get them online. And re-regulated and connectability. Yeah.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Anna, for sharing your wisdom and your stories with us today. Honestly, you're helping so many people out there. And I'm just so happy that you decided to share your gift.
Because thank you so much. Have a gift. It's nice to meet you. Oh, I'm going to leave you with a link to the daily practice if anybody wants to learn it.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'd love to check it out. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for listening to The Lavender Lifestyle. If you like the podcast, please share your support by leaving a review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also subscribe to our podcast YouTube channel at youtube.com/lavenderlifestyle and follow our Instagram @lavenderlifestyle. Sending you so much love. Bye.